I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Would I kill my own baby to save a village?
Would I go back in time and kill Hitler?
Would I take the promotion at work with strings attached?
Would I eat muffins for the rest of my life if it meant I didn't have to go to school?
Would I have Satan's child?
The big ones!
We'll see how you do. You can hear us now, Amanda?
Yeah, everything sounds good now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
7, 8, 9, 10.
And then followed by, you guessed it, 11.
Perfect.
What the fuck is this?
Hi, this is the big...
The big one.
No, wait. Oh, I just... You gotta say your name, remember? Oh, yeah, yeah. Hi, this is Maria Blasucci.
And I'm Amanda Lund.
And this is the big ones. Each week, we discuss a new ethical question ranging from historical decisions to relationship dilemmas to brain-busting moral choices.
The questions can be confusing, but they're always fun to discuss because they force you to look deep, deep, deep with inside yourself. Well, you like what you see?
John Early.
wait. What? That was the last thing you said.
Well, you like what... You, oh, the questions can...
No. Well, that thing, the rhyming thing.
Well, you like what you see, John Early.
It doesn't rhyme every
Will
time.
Will you like what you see?
When you look deep inside yourself.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry.
I'm very proud of myself. I did that by memory, and I did it right, and I never do it right.
It was really, really good.
Yeah, she spent about 15 minutes on that earlier today, memorizing it.
Thank you so much for being here, John.
I'm thrilled to be here. I can already tell this is a good podcast.
Really?
Because there is such a clear, like, I just, even podcasts with the concept always lead back to, like, what's your comedy story? Like,
ew,
what's your trajectory?
No. We don't want to get into that at
and
all.
I just,
I'm not even saying, like, where they could know you from.
Yeah.
But, I mean, 555.
Oh, no. Okay, that was
American
my intention.
Summer on
so
Netflix.
Your comedy story is that you were in...
In a nutshell, John, in a nutshell.
Where were you born?
Did you say what were you born?
What were you born as? And why? Why were you born?
You know, I don't know. No, but it is like, I just feel like this is such a... the other extreme when people try to avoid comedy trajectory, like bio podcastiness, then the concept just becomes so thin and silly. But this actually, I feel like, can lead to proper conversation.
Well, yeah, that's
it has been.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to set the
standard too high.
Too high.
No. Well, it's low. Setting it high is still low. So we
have
good.
A good one today for you, though.
Ooh,
it's gonna be fun.
Did you tailor it to me?
Yeah,
we did.
It's a good fit, I think. And don't take that as offense. It's just because it'll be explained.
Yes. Okay.
But yes, you know John Early from 555 with Kate Berlant, with Search Party.
Yes.
Did I say with Search Party? Or you know him from Search Party?
From Search Party.
He was in The Disaster Artist. In Neighbors 2.
That's where we met John, on Neighbors 2, where Maria and I were... craft service attendants.
We were secret agents on the...
Okay, careful, y'all. They were writers.
No, we were. We were associate producers.
I was telling, you guessed it, my boyfriend last night about...
you guessed it.
Yeah, I have a boyfriend now, okay. And I was telling him about how I knew you, because, like, there have been multiple times in our, like, you know, new relationship where... He's like, what are you doing tomorrow? And like, he has like a full day of like work. And he's like, what are you doing tomorrow? I'm like, a podcast. And so like, it has become I usually say that with like a groan, you know.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. like, but this time I was like, they're actually really funny.
Oh, because you wanted, you knew he was judging us for you.
Yes,
he was
going, exactly. In a
he was going,
oh, way.
I'm sorry, you have to do that.
Yes.
And we're like, sorry too, to be honest.
Are you heavily sought after right now for podcasts?
No. I think I've said no enough that I'm putting out some sort of an energy that is like slowing that ask down. That's maybe my way of spinning the fact that I'm less relevant than I was a year ago. But
no, you're not. But you're saying you say no if you don't want to do it.
Am I saying no in general to podcasts?
Yeah.
I'm like trying to like, you know,
be picky.
Not just, yeah. Be a little more picky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. And just any podcaster that's listening to this now,
if I said
lay
no.
off, lay off of him. Don't even get any ideas.
Don't think because he did this that he's open to doing yours. Because
exactly.
he's not.
We have a fucking connection from Neighbors.
Yeah, we
too.
Wrote. We allegedly wrote some nice lines for John to say in Neighbors 2.
Well, I do have to say, like, I was so relieved you guys were there because that was like one of the few like truly big budget like. Scary, like the level of fame on that set, it was Zac fucking Efron.
Ugh.
My scenes were Zac Efron and Dave Franco, so it was just, I had not like, I've, which is in some ways less scary, obviously, than working with like your heroes or something, but like, not that Zac Efron isn't my hero.
Well, careful.
And I did think he did such a good job. Remember how we were so touched by his performance?
He's one of the best actors.
He's incredible.
And I mean this with all the best in my heart. If he would just tone down his body,
yeah.
he would be taken very seriously as an actor. And I don't know what that is, if that's just him feeling good about himself and that's why he does that. But
which is fine.
He's a beautiful soul and a beautiful actor.
Gorgeous, but then you get that kind of roid. Look,
yeah, it becomes you know, he's already at this age becoming a joke of himself,
unnecessarily so, because he's funny and he's good. Listen, he's got the goods.
He really does got the goods. And I think I was so delighted. I was like, he really is like a curious actor. Like, he wants to like he really was like exploring every take. Like, he wanted to get it.
Zach,
right,
what are you doing over there? Just looking around.
He's picking up vases.
Yeah vases.
Opening drawers. Yeah.
This time I'm going to do it. I'm just going to kind of enjoy where I am.
Yeah,
is that okay?
Yeah. I'm going to enjoy
props.
The textiles.
Is it okay if I just touch?
That is a real thing, though.
Oh, no, I know.
People who are obsessed with props. Have you guys witnessed that?
Only in acting class.
Unprop the prop is what I say. Don't pick something up unless you can make that not look like a prop.
Absolutely. Well, wait. I just have to quickly say this. We're now complete. I trust that you guys will steer this back.
Oh, we'll
when
see.
You need to.
I don't know.
Okay, great.
No one's driving this car.
Wait, is this like a Pete Holmes like 3 hour per hour?
No, podcast?
Yeah. I hope you cleared your schedule.
No, it's usually an hour 15.
Ooh, I have an Airbnb right around the corner in case this goes too late. But I was talking to my friend this morning actually about this old acting program that we both did at Atlantic Theater Company in New York. And like the kind of they study practical aesthetics as the technique.
Oh, that's Mammoth. That's Mammoth. Like the Mammoth company.
Yes.
Okay.
And
William H. Macy is very well known over there.
He is. He's one of the co-founders and co-thinkers of mm-hmm. you know, philosophers that developed that technique. I mean, it's really the same as really any technique. Is like you find an action for any given scene, and then everything you do, like. As an actor, everything you do is in service of pursuing that action. And so it's like, but when you're first learning it, they're like, they're so kind of like intense about that rule. Like, I was going to say dogmatic, but then I realized I don't know what that means, but I think that's right.
Mm-hmm. I think it's when it's something is set in stone in a way and nothing can, you can't get around it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they're boom. So they were very dogmatic about that. And so like they were like, no, everything you do has to be in service of the action. So like even like picking up this iced coffee, like you have to figure out a way that can help you play your action.
And is the action like a literal like physical objective, or is it like an emotional?
It's like an emotional objective. It's like what's the, you're kind of like, the whole point of that technique is you're not breaking it up into beats. You're like looking at the whole scene and like, what's their action for the whole scene?
So like, what would an action would be like? I need to get him to hear me.
Yes, yes. Like to
so
get
you talk louder
to get.
I'm sorry. Maybe I'm misunderstanding.
Okay.
Mr. Mammoth, sweetie, I don't quite understand.
Okay.
No, it's like, like to get forgiveness.
Oh.
It's like really like essential stuff, like to get.
But why does picking up a glass have anything to do with getting forgiveness?
Well, that's the thing. I think it's more of like an exercise when you're first there where they're trying to get rid of your habits.
Your extras.
Yeah, your extras. And you're like, and doing things and kind of like, they want you to break out, which is a noble goal. Like they want you to break out of like doing your idea of the scene. So like, you know, so like basically they're trying to get you just to like not think about line reading. So it's like, just pursue the action, pursue the action, pursue the action. And then any sort of emotion or like, you know, cadence or intonation is just going to come from that pursuit, and it's not going to be something you pre-planned.
Because your mouth is full of water.
Exactly.
From the glass you drank out of.
But then it's like, so many people when they're first starting it are so like, they're following the rules so much that it's like, they're trying to get forgiveness. This is very physical, I'm realizing, what I'm doing on a podcast.
He's just holding a glass up. That's
yeah,
what
in like an intense way.
In
like,
an intense way.
It's like taking a sip to like get forgiveness is like,
oh wow, okay, he's taking a sip. He's taking a sip.
So people end up looking absolutely insane when they're doing the technique.
Uh-huh.
I can't imagine, like, what's an action to get forgiveness? Like, maybe you would, if there were a puddle, take your coat off and put your coat over the puddle for the other person.
Yeah, or write a letter saying, yes, I'm sorry.
Yes.
But it has to be, but your tools, or you don't have the coat, you don't have the puddle, you don't have the letter or the quill. You just have the words of the scene, and that is my time, and I have to go to my Airbnb. I'm so sorry.
Thank you for being here.
This is amazing. We'll get into the concept later.
That's crazy. Wow. We should do an actor's podcast where we just talk about different, we try to break down these different philosophies that don't quite matter, I guess.
Yeah, or have anything to do with your show. Wait, but why were we talking about that?
This will,
it was about the iced coffee. It was
show,
about
actually.
The prop work. Oh, prop work.
Prop work, yes.
Yes, it's just about, like, actors, like, using props in ways that are just, like, so not lifelike.
Right, right, because we were talking about Zac Efron.
Oh, yes.
Oh, actually, right. There is a connection with to our big one today.
Yeah.
So, well, John, can we move on to your little big one?
Yes, but can I just say one final thing? The reason why I even talked about Neighbors 2 was to, like, talk to your viewers about how you guys were truly my safe haven on that shoot. It was, like,
so
only
nice.
4 days or something, but it was, like, if I had gone back to the hotel every night alone and like slept in my bed, I would have been like, I would have just ordered like vodka from room service and like jerked off. But like,
you guys
thankfully, like we had dinners and like, it was just
was
so,
fun.
It was so nice to have you there.
And it was nice for us to have you there.
I can't believe you went on for so many more months after I left.
It's a blur, honestly. I was just saying to Maria that there were some weekends, because we were both talking about how like we're both kind of semi-introverted, so we can spend a lot of time alone.
Yeah.
And we had some like weekends in Atlanta when we would not contact each other once and wouldn't see anyone or talk to anyone the entire week.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I would like go to lunch and go to see a movie and not even text you.
Yeah, because we were seeing each other 12 hours every day, like sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
And then it was like Saturday came. It was like, no. We need a day off.
That's fair. That's a healthy friendship right there.
But we lived in Atlanta. We lived in Atlanta for like 2 months. I had a car. I had a rental car and a home.
Yeah.
We had to rent Airbnbs.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy.
But I had to force my first paycheck. Like, I had to force them to give it to because I didn't have enough money to put it to payment. I was like, okay, so this is so great that I'm working on this.
Thank you.
I need just, like, a little bit of a... You guys got to give me a little bit of that money right now just so I can live here.
What if you had been arrested on the set for not paying your Airbnb bill?
It would have been something to talk about, I guess.
Well, that was fun.
It was a lot of fun. That was a good experience.
Anyway, this is a very supportive, loving group.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, do you have any moral, what we like to do is start off asking our guests if they have any, you know, little moral quandaries. It can be something as small as, you know, should I pick my daughter up from the airport? Or as big of, you know, should I send my daughter to the airport and never talk to, never talk to her again? Yes.
There's got to be something.
I mean, there definitely is something. It's, like, so stupid to talk about. But, like, it's a friend, like, who is a very, very old best friend. Like, from the
80? How old is he?
He's 82. No, it's a woman. And we were like, best friends when we were, like, 12.
Okay.
And, like, and we, like, you know, as like very intense, intimate friendships go, we and like historic friendships, like friends that you have for a long time, like we had a lot of like stuff from middle school, high school, and beyond that, like, because you're like, you're friends in like the weirdest, most formative developmental time where you're like just as mentally ill as you are now, but you just don't have the tools to you don't have the tools to deal with it or each other's like weird psychosis. So it's like, it just was like full of like unspoken, like, just a year, just like stuff we've never dealt with.
Yeah.
Cause we were too young to deal with at the time. Mm-hmm. And so it like, we stayed friends through college and after that. And then we like a couple years ago, just tried to like sort of address some stuff. And it turned into this like blowout fight on the street where we were like crying and screaming and then like laughing and like able to be like, hi, I love you, you know, whatever. And then like, yeah. Very like deeply cathartic, like where I was like, just like years of pent up like anger and confusion. Mm. We're just like, where it like didn't make really much sense at all. Like there was so much stuff that was actually impossible to even address. It just was basically like releasing like the pressure valve. That's all it really was, which was valuable. But like nothing was really said. And then like we kind of got to the end of it, and like my friend was like, "Should we not be friends?" And I was like, that seems so insane to me. I was like, well, no. I was like, of course not. I was like, that seems so dramatic in the moment. I was like, no. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, look, we can maybe like, let's like cool down for a little bit, but like, we're not going to not be friends. We might need to like take a step back, but like, no. And then, and this is like not even confusing. Like as in like, this isn't really a moral quandary. I feel like I simply acted morally like, well, here. Okay. But, like, then she, like, maybe a couple nights later called me and left a message and was like, obviously, there was so much we didn't say, you know, whatever. And I was, like, basically on vacation when she called and I, like, texted her. I was like, totally, like, there's, you know, whatever, we should definitely talk about it. And then I, like, never called her back. And, like, and we didn't contact each other. And, like, it was, like, basically, I did feel like there was kind of a mutual acknowledgement that she was right, that maybe like we actually should not be friends, like it's for right now, you know, right. It's like, it's too big of an issue. We scare each other too much in this weird way. It's like, we have so many, like we have so much like evidence almost like against each other from the years that we've known each
dangerous.
Other.
And
it's, it's very, it feels dangerous.
How long ago was this where this blow up happened?
This was like 2 years ago or something.
Okay. And so like, where are you now with?
Still have not spoken. And it's so crazy. Cause it's like, there was never a decision.
Yeah.
And like, and the thing is though, she did actually raise the question. She actually was brave enough to say it. And then I didn't say yes or no. I, in fact, said no. And then,
in a passive way, let it happen.
And then let it naturally happen.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel gross about that. Now, there are other ways in which
should.
I can.
Well, yeah, but I don't think you should.
Yeah.
Because, and is that, I cut you off. What were you saying?
Well, the other part of it is that, like, what's happening now, why this is, like, I mean, I think about this all the time. I have dreams about it, like, literally every night.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I'm always thinking about it, and like, I don't like, I but like, what's happening is like, we have a couple friends who are like getting married like this year, and one wedding I can't go to, that's very soon, and like another wedding's like in the fall, and so like the one wedding that I can't go to, it's like, that just was like, when there was a period of time where I thought I could go to, and I was like, here we go, like we're gonna see each other, like, and we need to therefore talk beforehand, or it's gonna be so weird. And so, like, but now I can't go to the wedding, and I'm like, well, I need to talk to her anyway. I can't just be like, I can't just only talk to her because we have to.
Right.
You know, like.
Yeah, and she'll be at that other wedding.
Yes.
Yeah,
so, like, so now I have a little bit more time, and, like, we have a little bit more time to, like, even though I don't know if she's approaching this like this, if she might be just, like, totally cool with
she was on our podcast last week, and she had the exact same dilemma.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
And she told it a little differently, though. I think this is a very normal thing to happen to friends, especially.
Well, almost when you're talking about it, it feels like you guys are family in a way, and that you're having feelings like these kind of anxious feelings surrounding this because this person's like a family member to you.
Exactly.
And it's one thing if it's just a friend, you're okay to kind of both just let that friendship die. But when you know someone so well and kind of like came of age with them, they are more like family. And that's why it feels so yucky.
Yeah. But it does seem like she brought it up. So basically both of you guys were on the same page. You know, you had this blow up and then she kind of said it out loud and you wanted to hang on to what you had. And you were like, no, I don't want this to end. And she was, you know, saying, well, maybe we should. And then you showed through your actions that you did want what she wanted. And
which is cowardly and feels very male. You know, it does feel very male.
But she didn't get back to you either. Like, she gave you that one phone call, right? And then that was, it wasn't like she was continuing.
No, I mean, that would have been maybe a different story. But I do feel like the ball was in my court and I didn't ever.
Did, like, your little people pleaser instinct kick in or something?
Well, totally. Like, meaning.
That, like, when she, you were afraid to, like, say, yes, I don't want to be your friend.
Yeah, totally. Like, that's the thing is, like, you know, years, just, like, layers and layers and layers of, like, Southern people-pleasing, you know.
Prevent
me from being able to see in the moment what's actually a, like, a calm, thoughtful decision. It's just, nope, the first thing you got to do is please.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
I agree. I have a little bit of that too, even though I'm from Long Beach, California.
Yeah, so it's Southern California.
Southern Californians have
it's
that.
The global South.
Yeah, it's all anything below a certain line, the meridian.
Yeah.
Is that right? Is the meridian?
We'll have to.
Yeah, Google it. This happens with friendships. I think that. Friendships are like family, right? But they're also not, because they also are a lot like a relationship, like a romantic relationship. Because with family, there is this bond that can for sure happen with other people, but it is a very it is what it is. You are family, right? And even if you grow apart, you're still family. That there's something connecting you two together. When it's a friend that you have to. That you grow up with and then you start drifting apart.
Right.
You can say, oh, but we have all this history together, but nothing's binding you together still. You can float away in your own directions and you have that history together, but that in no way binds you for the rest of your life.
Right.
And that's a lot like a relationship. You can be with someone and be so connected with them, but at a certain point, you start drifting away, and that's that, and you just have the times you had together and what you learned from that person, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, relationships I've had, you know, I learned so much from them, but in no way do I feel any connection to them anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, did you, you know, I think you did a normal thing, which was to go, like, no, we should still be friends, even if maybe you weren't feeling it, and then you did with your actions what maybe you felt inside. But I think you both were feeling the same thing, and I think her reaching out wasn't necessarily like a yes, let's be friends.
No, it was like let's talk in a more thoughtful, less insane, explosive way.
Yeah,
but who has the energy? Sometimes also it's like as you get older, you have so much to worry about, especially if you have you know, you mentioned your boyfriend.
Thank
like
you.
You have to like, those that's your life now, and those are the relationships
have
that you have
now.
To.
Yes.
How many do you have now?
But those are like, that's where your emotional energy needs to go. And it's really hard to carve out the space to give that emotional energy to someone who's like not really in your present life.
Yeah. But that's therein lies the moral dilemma, in that like we're now, because of just circumstance, are going to be in the same space because like
for a little bit.
And it's easy to weather. Like you could like, I'm like, well, yeah, no, I could just. We could go to these weddings and weather the tension, you know, and just deal with it and be adults, which I think we're both totally capable of. Mm-hmm. We would never not talk to each other, like dart glances across from
right.
Like, fuck you, you know. I think we would like absolutely like, that's the thing. It's like we'd be capable of actually having a really good time. Like I think we'd be able to like get drunk and like dance all night, actually.
Yeah, right.
But like, I also think we're both too, like, we just know each other too. I think we'd be also fundamentally, like, embarrassed to, like, show up at the same thing and not have addressed this shit.
Yeah, and
I'm embarrassed.
And you're having anxiety about it. So why not just rip the Band-Aid off, like, have a really, like, short, like, like nice convo with her and then leave it. It will end at that kind of nice surface level and let it stay there forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you
like, just let it stay there.
You just need to know going into it, whether you write her an email being like, hey, like, this is how I'm feeling, or hey, let's get on the phone and chat. You need to know going into it what you want mm-hmm. out of her relationship. Mm-hmm. So it's not wishy-washy. It's not like, oh, I'm, you know, having, you know, we're having fun at this wedding. And then, you know, you start feeling the same way again a month later when you realize that she's not still part of your life, that she is kind of on this... another plane of, you know, it's more history. What you're feeling toward her is more of your history, not that you need her in your life right now.
Right now, yeah.
So just going into it with that, knowing what you want in mind and her being aware of that and her telling you what she has in mind. I mean, I think it's when it's that... I mean, these friendships are big things.
Yeah, especially for me.
Yeah. No, I know. You've been... Yeah.
I think everyone knows that about me.
You're the friend guy.
And I've kind of built my whole persona as an entertainer on that. And I've basically also like never had a real like proper romantic relationship until right now.
Oh wow.
You know, so like I think what's filled that space and I really don't prioritize one over the other, and which is I think a great gift of not being in relationships for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that my friendships were just as important to me, if not mm-hmm. well they were more important to me than like romantic pursuits, and like, but then they also took on a level of intimacy that is totally great. I feel like I learned everything about intimacy, not through my family, not through boys. I learned it through my friendships with women, really, mm-hmm. you know? And like, but there are no guidelines with friendships. Like there are such clear guidelines of like what family means. Like the family thing is like, it's eternal. Yeah. So it's like, you make it work or you don't, you know, it's so absolute. And then with like romance, it's like, there's a huge cultural understanding of how you end a relationship, like people never behave in the correct way, obviously, but like there is like a code mm-hmm. of like how you're supposed to get in and out of relationships and like what the kind of, you know, but like friendships, I just are so murky because there's so many different levels of friendship and like
it's, yeah, you're totally right. That's really interesting. We Maria and I we've had one experience where we had to like break up with a friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the only time I've ever dealt with anything
really
like that.
It was really hard for me. Yeah.
But now we're fine.
But you took it really well.
It is hard, but I've actually been seeing some articles about like how to deal with toxic friendships, like that kind of popping up on different websites I read.
Yeah.
My friendship blogs I follow. Yeah.
It's what my whole thing is. It's I hate change. I hate change more than anything. But Miley Cyrus said recently...
Girl, let yourself change. I remember when she said that.
It was so inspiring. Yeah.
What is that song? No one stays the same. Oh. It's a really good song.
I love her.
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Genuinely. Okay. No. It's. I know listeners are going, oh, you're being ironic.
No,
you know?
No. And the music video is good.
The music video, it's called Younger Now.
Yeah.
But anything.
We've had some Java here at Team. What's the podcast called?
The Big Ones.
Team Big Ones. That's an interesting dilemma, John. And thanks for sharing it with us.
I wasn't finished.
You got your quote out.
No. What I was going to say is.
You hate change.
I hate change more than anything. Yes. But life takes you, pushes and pulls you in all different ways. And you cannot hold on to things that don't, that as you grow older, there are things in your life that just sort of slip away, whether mm-hmm. you want to or not. And it's not because anyone did anything wrong. It's because people just become different people. And you have to appreciate that for that part in your time in your life, this person was a huge part of your life.
Yeah.
And that you are a huge part of her life. And you grew and you are who you are because of her. But that in no way means that going forward that you have any obligation to be part of their life or them to be part of your life. Because if it just isn't easy, friendships are hard for sure. But if you aren't inside yourself, no, I'm not willing to work for this, that's fine because you've got new things that you are willing to work for.
Search party.
Yes. Yes, you got a TBS show that takes time.
Yeah, if no, she's you
not
guys are
into,
right.
And
yeah.
if she's not into that.
She has been replaced yeah, by the TBS show.
I don't even know if she's fucking watching it.
I'm sure she is. She's watching it and she's throwing bananas at the TV is what she's doing. No, but you just have to be aware of that. Everything gives room to other things. So you
yes,
just
yes.
just be aware of that. And maybe she is still part of your life and you do need her, but it sounds like maybe not, and maybe that's okay.
And there might be a version of us being involved in each other's lives that we have that is actually maybe balanced and good for us. And we live in different, you know, cities now, which obviously I think relieves tension and could maybe lead to something a little more interesting, kind of communication that's like good for us. But I think this is very helpful advice, and yeah, I have
you
to go.
You could be pen pals. You know, you could be pen pals. You could write each other letters. That's always a nice thing.
See,
to...
I like that idea.
Me
a
and
lot.
My friend Nila, when she still lived in New York, and I was out here, we write each other letters just to keep in touch. And she just write me a really nice letter about what was going on in her life. She'd send it to me with like some pictures in there. It was a snail mail letter, and I do the same thing. And it was a cool thing to just look forward to.
Yeah,
get it in the mail, and it's a way to keep up with someone where it's not like, oh, I have to text, whatever, I have to call. I'd say do that. Try that out.
Yeah, I that is actually my impulse before you ever said anything.
Oh, really?
And, yes,
you never.
My idea.
You didn't.
I'm in control.
You
I'm in control.
Yeah, that all reminds me of this song. By Miley Cyrus, where she's
like, no, not
nothing stays the same.
Ooh, should I try and play it?
Yes, yes, okay. Please play it, and then we can.
And while you play it, can I pee?
Yes, yes.
But then
yes.
Can I also take my mic to the bathroom so that?
No, you're mic'd. We mic'd.
I'll pull it up if you want to go out and use it. There's a you know you saw where the bathroom.
Oh
was.
No, John. John. No, change, as Miley said, is a thing you can count on.
People, change is scary, but you know what? You gotta open your arms to it.
Can you, do you, are you getting it up? Because I think that'll be really nice. Oh, yeah.
It starts with some rain.
And some frogs. I think they recorded it, just a little backstory. I think they recorded it, like, at her Malibu house outside while it was raining.
Seriously?
I think so, yeah. It's very bare bones. Feels like I just woke up. Feels like I just woke up.
Maria, you're freaking me out with your good advice today.
You mean really? Like all of this time I've been... Even though it's not who I am. I'm not afraid of who I used to be.
No one stays.
Okay, I'm gonna stop it now. Wait, just wait. Oh.
I love the technology you guys have here. They have these like three very expensive microphones, a like gorgeous Apple desktop computer, and then you're playing Miley Cyrus song.
I know, they can hear it. If they want it, they can hear it on their own.
Yeah,
time.
Look it up. I hope you cut that anyway.
No, I'm keeping that in.
Okay, so I think it's funny. Time to get to our big one.
I have to say, I'm having so much fun.
Okay,
and I hope that you release this in full.
I think it'll be pretty in full for sure. Now, John, going into this
John
big
is
one,
sending a text.
Oh, sorry. He's a text to himself.
And your problem with that is what? I'm asking my friend if she wants to go to the same friend.
Oh, really? Wow.
Wow.
Oh, we're totally fine. I'm kidding. a different friend if we're going to go furniture shopping.
Okay. Just going in, this was sent in by a listener who also sent in the monkey problem.
The chimpanzee.
So this is popular.
Well, he's
one listener.
One listener is sending in gemstones.
Yeah, Nathan E. Moore is he's our new favorite listener.
Ooh, yeah,
we love you, Nathan.
We love you, Nathan.
Okay, Nathan, we love you.
Okay,
so
is everyone ready?
I'm so scared.
Okay, it's 1850, and you are terribly deformed. You live in a small town and work for a local inn, doing household chores in return for room and board. People in the town don't necessarily mistreat you, but they do not embrace you. You have limited personal interactions and spend almost all your free time up in the attic watching the world go by without you. A man like P.T. Barnum comes to town from the big city. While others see a monster, he sees a great opportunity. He invites you to join his traveling freak show. You will not be dancing or singing. Your only job will be to be looked at as an oddity. You will work less, earn more money, and get to travel. But you have to sign a lifetime contract and will lose your anonymity. Do you join the freak show?
Okay, you will travel. You will make money. And yeah. What else?
You'll lose your anonymity.
Okay. Yeah. Stay with positive.
But you have, you travel, you get to make your own money. Yeah. You know, you'll see more of the world than you ever would staying in your small town. Maybe make some more connections with the other people on tour with you, I'd assume, yes. Possibly.
Yeah. The elephant.
But you sign away your freedom.
Before we get into it, let's just create the world a little bit, okay?
I have gout.
So do you want to be our guy in the tower?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll play different. We like to create the world.
Sometimes we'll do a little improv surrounding.
So, what's your name? What's your name as this deformed figure?
Barry.
Okay, Barry.
Barry. Yeah. Barry. Very, very. Yeah, it's very, yeah. Very. Okay, so you're an orphan. Your mother got one look at you and went, nope, and gave you to the orphanage. And so you've been working at this inn since you were a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, doing Cinderella type chores, you know.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
friends with aunt, you're friends with the mice.
Is my mother the She's there?
I think no, your mother's dead.
Orphanage is what you said.
Yeah, she sent you away but she was hit by a car immediately after she put you
karma. Karma.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think no family, no friends.
In our car, sorry.
In 1850?
A buggy, a horse and carriage.
Yeah, it was a carriage. Yeah.
But yeah, so you work in this inn, you know, you work probably a 12-hour day, you know,
maybe even more.
Cooking.
I mean, maybe you have to be on call. So you're in your little attic, room and you've got your little bed and your little window that looks out over the city. Maybe sometimes you even sneak out on the roof and you write down some of your thoughts.
You're friends with the gargoyles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then this man comes to town and what should we call him? Stuart.
Well, is it just P.T. Barnum?
No.
No, we should name him something
because
else.
Because that's already been tapped for Showman or whatever.
P.P. Barnum.
Showman Showtime.
P.P. Barnum. I love P.P. Barnum.
P.P. Barnum. Pepe. Pepe. He's French, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Pepe.
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 Okay. Pepe.
Oh, Pepe. He's French.
Yeah.
So Pepe Le Rouge.
Yeah.
Right. Which is kind of a cool name.
Yeah.
He's maybe staying at the inn. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And he catches a glimpse of you.
Yeah.
Oh, he goes, come here, boy.
Yeah. Come. What's that? Huh? What? Yes, he's having his brandy by himself in the corner thinking how the show has gotten stale. His show has gotten so stale.
Yeah, yes.
And he's sitting there.
Because it's all, I think at this point his show is like, it's women wearing mermaid tails. Like, it's all kind of manufactured.
Yes,
his show. And
nothing
now he's
real.
Like, and through Barry, he realizes, oh, I can actually find like authentically deformed people and exploit the hell out of them.
So he sees you in the corner and you're in the shadows.
Yes, yes.
And he goes, you, who's there? Because he's not a people person, right? Who's there? And and you come out and you're
wait, but can you say, come here, boy?
Oh, yeah. Come here, boy.
I am not a boy.
If not a boy, what are you?
I am 36. But have the features of a child.
Come here in the light. Let me see you.
No, I don't like to be seen. And this is where it gets offensive, but I do think that...
This is correct.
This is correct.
We're leaning into the tropes of a movie. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what...
That's
isn't
okay.
Life... Art imitates life.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. What are you?
Human. The same desires and dreams as you, just without the resources.
Okay. I didn't know where to go with that because it really moved me.
So, I know. That was beautiful.
It was shocking.
But I think maybe he touches you. Like, he touches your face.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
I touch
Pepe Le Rouge.
Pepe
Le Rouge touches
Pepe.
Barry.
So there's an accent.
Pepe.
That's,
sorry, I struggle with
words.
Words. What's your character's name again?
Barry.
Barry. Okay, yeah, definitely.
Short for Barnaby.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm Mrs. Scrimshaw, the owner of the inn. Barry, these bloodstains aren't going to get themselves out.
Be down in a moment, ma'am. She thinks I'm British.
You're good, aren't you? You're good at shocking people, aren't you?
I don't know what you mean.
You know what I mean. Tell me, boy, where do you live? Do you live in these walls?
I live in the attic.
In the attic is no place for a man like you.
But this is all I know.
What if I could show you more?
In what way?
Not like that.
Okay. No, I'm fine.
What if I could show you the world?
How?
I'm sorry. Is this boy bothering you? Get back to your attic.
Excuse me, ma'am. What if I were to take this boy off your hands just for a little bit, just to try out some things?
You can have him.
I have a show. It's an entertainment show. It's for people to come and watch. We have all sorts of things. We've got animals. We've got acrobats. Why, we even have a little sideshow where people can come and look at the wonders of the world.
Well, I can't dance. I can't sing.
You wouldn't have to, my boy.
What do you mean?
You just have to be. God has given
now,
you...
Now, wait a minute.
Yes, no, Mrs. Scrimshaw?
Whatever you give him, I get 10%.
Well, you just said I could have him for free.
But that's before I knew the whole deal.
Oh.
Quiet down. I'll go.
You will?
Yes.
You're going to go?
Oh, Miss Scrimshaw, what a lovely...
Yeah, podcast over. I'm going to go.
Wow, you're
gonna
go?
No, I actually find this to be... I think we can have a very generative conversation about this, because we can also apply this to modern times really beautifully.
Definitely.
But I do think the choice at this time period is kind of a no-brainer.
Okay, so should we make it 2007?
No.
Well, I think we should talk about the pros and cons of going.
I think also at the base of it.
Even though I don't think we're going to be truly wrestling with the decision.
I totally see how at that time with such limited options and like people with, you know, any sort of disability or like physical variants, like they were seriously just like put out on the street. Like you couldn't really find work, like you weren't respected, you know, you didn't have medical care provided. So I do think in this situation, like, that's probably the better option to go, although who knows how he'll really be treated at the freak show.
Right.
But Pepe seems cool.
But I guess,
I don't know. I'm just objectively.
Yeah. I mean, he seems okay. The moral quandary is like, even back then, like, is that kind of exploitation okay? Like,
right. Well, this is why I think it could be really interesting to talk about now, because it's so much more, it's so much less. Like, obviously, if that were happening now, and of course there are ways in which that does happen as bluntly now, but, like, there is a more, like, subtle, it's not more insidious, it's just more, like...
Kind of with, like, what, like, some diversity, like, casting, and, like, not, like, that's great, but people using that to, like, bring in, like...
That's one step farther, which is really interesting, we should talk about that, but, like, I just more mean, like... You do. It is like something I'm obsessed with. It's a concept that I'm obsessed with. It's not a concept. It's just something that happens in the world. But like dancing with the devil. Like you do sometimes, especially when you're in like some sort of marginalized group. Like your only way out is like through making these moral compromises
and to play into a stereotype in order to get to a place where then hopefully maybe you could have more opportunity.
Yes, and then what happens as a result is that there becomes this like. Righteous on the other side, like the people who aren't faced with that dilemma, that moral dilemma, that big one.
That's good.
Thank you.
Perfect.
There becomes this like kind of righteous thing on the other side where I find to be so despicable, where like when people have judgments about like, okay, I'll just get more specific. Like in my life, again, I'm a very extremely privileged white gay man. But I have had like little skirmishes with like casting of like gay roles, you know, like where this is kind of an issue. Where like, or in creating gay characters and stuff, where people like, where people say to me, like, see, I like that you don't play into, like, stereotypes. Mm. That you, like, and they see that as a compliment, and I see that as, like, a failure of my work.
Right.
You know, because they're like, I like that you're not, like, flamboyant. As if, like, being flamboyant is, like, selling out or something.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And it's, like, and, like, or, like, as if playing into archetypes and stereotypes is just inherently bad, when it's actually, like, there's such a long history of having to, like, you have no choice. You're Barry. You have to, like, in order to make any sort of money, have any sort of agency in this life, you have to go out in front of people night after night and be, like, super queenie, you know?
Right, yeah. Right,
and, like,
right.
And be like, I'm a faggot. Like, throw tomatoes at me, you know? Like,
and then now suddenly people looking at that and being like, oh, he's part of the problem when he was put in this position to have to do
I've
that.
I've seen that. There was something on Twitter last week about Tiffany Haddish where they were saying, is she wonderful?
Nope. So funny.
But she, I guess now casting people are going like Tiffany, like do it like Tiffany Haddish, like to black
women. We
wanted
Tiffany Haddish.
And
yes.
Black women are going like, that's her. Like, that's her. Yeah. That's her personality.
Yes.
And so when you're asking black women to come in for these roles and going like, do it like that black woman, it's like, there's no room for people to just have personality when it comes to certain diversities. Even with women casting, I feel, and you know, I think it goes across the board though. I think people love archetypes and they love to and it is okay.
And it's
that's
about
for
finding
sure.
The balance.
Yes.
But and it's like, not, it's about not confusing archetypes with personality. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's just such an interesting question of like what, like the good in stereotypes and the good in archetypes, mm-hmm. like, and what is like cult, like some, like art, like, and then archetypes become, or stereotypes and archetypes, whatever, become like reappropriated by that culture, like, mm-hmm. like negative stereotypes rather that are seen as culturally negative, like become like,
that you can re-own.
Yeah, you reclaim. Yeah. And then, like, and that becomes a part of, like, a cultural identity and, like, and, but, yeah, and then, but then you still have people on the outside who just, like, have a kind of a steadfast, like, stereotypes equal bad, you know?
Yeah.
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 I guess it's interesting because thinking about, like, my 2018 perspective, what I would say to
Barry
is that don't go start your own freak show.
Yes.
You know, like, generate your own content. Like, like you should not, like, let
Barry,
this privilege.
Just goes around telling all these deformed people to create their own content.
But that's what I would say back then. Like, don't let this guy be your boss. Like, there's an opportunity here.
For
and
you to have control over the way you're presented.
Yeah. So you, I mean, but I don't think that may have been in the cards for Barry.
You don't think Miss Scrimshaw might have put a little seed in his ear that said, maybe you should go do it?
Right. No, Miss Scrimshaw wants to start one.
She says, wants
keep him at the inn. Come to my inn, you know, and see this guy I got working here suddenly.
Yeah.
But I think back then, you know, today, that's what I would say is like, it would be like, I do think, well, back then people, it wasn't like global. The world wasn't so connected globally as it is now.
Right.
And so people would go to like the World's Fair to see the pygmies and to see, you know, all like the Indians and all these different types of people. And those people were being exploited, but people literally had no way to see these people.
Yeah.
And that same thing with like a bearded lady or, you know, a man with elephantitis or, you know, I paid once to see a very large Clydesdale. Of course. I pay to see a big zucchini, too.
What?
You've never gone to a fair and paid to see a big horse?
Not a big zucchini.
You paid.
And by the way, was it amazing?
It was a very large horse. Yeah, it was huge. You paid $2.
They just put a mini horse next to it, so you thought that was the regular sized one.
But you go into this big, like, dark tent, ooh, and the horse is in there.
Yeah.
And that's how they would have displayed Barry as well, I think.
And the zucchini. Where did you see that?
The zucchini was just out on a display.
Yeah.
But I did. I think I gave a donation
to the zucchini. You tucked it in the zucchini's pocket.
Did they wax it? Like, did they basically
I'm sure they didn't.
It was, that was so rotting. Cool. What was so cool about it is that you wouldn't see the same one the next year.
Yeah, that is cool.
And
Amanda played a pinhead in a
production of The Elephant Man. I auditioned to be the beautiful actress, but the role I was cast in was the pinhead.
She had to wear stockings over her head and go.
It was a horrible and I
what good. Production?
The Elephant Man.
Yes, it was
in college. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I had to sing. I had to. There was one point when. So basically, sometimes we didn't have our stockings on our heads and we were playing other small roles. So I would wear makeup because, like, you know, I was just had my face exposed and yeah. I in a theater. And so then when in the pinhead scene when we were getting beaten, I, you know, actually got some tears going. But then it caused my mascara to run all over my stocking. Oh. So the director told me I couldn't wear makeup for the whole production.
No.
God, but then you never cried again.
No, I couldn't get there.
Couldn't get the tears. That's so funny.
But there is something, and we're all, as performers and actors, like, we're all exploiting ourselves.
Constantly.
But yeah, so anyway, there is an element of it that it obviously seems morally wrong to exploit people like that.
Yes.
I wonder, yes.
But we're talking about Barry's decision, not about Pepe LaRouge.
Yeah.
Pepe LaRouge.
I wonder, though, because, okay, so if Barry, let's say Barry did want to travel, you know, that was his dream in life, was to travel, and he loved people, and he loved being around people, and this is an opportunity for him to travel and be around people, no matter, you know, like...
I mean, it's kind of amazing, like, because people in his town who aren't deformed also probably could never travel the world.
So it's giving this opportunity. It's also, you know, giving people a perspective on him where, like, they can look at him and see him. And I'm not saying, like, a sideshow is the way to look at a person. But
right,
I mean,
but he can be like, I am real. Like, he can expose himself to the world. Because, like, being just up in the attic with Mrs. Scrimshaw.
Yeah, right.
Like, I mean, I just, and I, by the way, only can speak from, speak on this from having played him 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I just learned a lot.
What was that? What was he feeling during that? Was he excited?
Nervous?
That, yeah.
It's a good question. I think, there was, like, kind of a somber excitement. Like, meaning, I think...
He was wary.
I knew, yes, that, like, this was problematic.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't think he trusts Pepe.
Pepe. God.
But I'm sorry.
Pepe.
But I think... I know, and I was so tough on you earlier.
I know. God. It comes back around.
Yeah. I think he trusted Pepe. I mean, he did not trust Pepe.
Right.
And felt like, okay, I'm certainly potential... This is, like... This isn't just sheer, like... I have a ticket out of this town. Yeah. He knew he could feel that it was dark, but he was also excited.
To put yourself out there that way, and after you've hidden for so long, to not know how people are going to react to you, because you've probably been told, like, it's not safe for you out there. People aren't going to understand you, and now to switch that and make it be like, no, people are paying to see you.
Right.
Like, it's kind of interesting because it's like almost like sex work. Like, in a way, you can look at it and being like, no, this is empowering the women.
Yeah.
Or you can look at it from the other side and say, no, it's exploiting them. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's sometimes doing both.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And it's interesting.
I'm a big believer of if the deformities of people or the handicaps of people were more, weren't so, if we as a culture were more able to look at someone that we, like right now, you know, someone walks by and they have some deformity, you immediately look away because you go, I don't want to look because then they'll think I'm looking at them. And so you immediately cut yourself off from ever having any communication with that person whatsoever. Where if it was more of like, as a culture, you know, we were able to look at each other and just be like, oh, I like, and to,
wait,
and to acknowledge.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Okay.
Hi,
I see that.
Yes. I'm fine.
And yeah. I'm fine. No, yeah. just where it was an open conversation where right. it wasn't that the person looking at the deformed person didn't feel shamed for looking. Yes. And the person that was deformed didn't feel shamed for being deformed.
Yeah.
That it could be like if I... Of course, if I saw someone that looked so different from me, that it's shocking. But the more I look at that person, the less shocking it is, and the more I see them as a person, and because I come to know them, I don't think there's any room for that whatsoever. The way we are now,
no,
because you do not. It is told to you. Do not look at. Don't make that person feel uncomfortable by looking at them.
Right.
We're like, if my kid was around someone who looked like them, I'd be like, go up to them, go talk to them, and go just get to know them. Don't, you know? I don't know. It's just weird. I would love for it to be more open that we just are able to acknowledge what's going on.
Yes.
Outwardly with us.
Well, it's also just like this is. There's a lot here.
Again. Yeah, it's a lot to unpack.
The homeless thing, like panhandlers begging, like I find it so crazy that like it is just like culturally decided upon that you ignore, and that you just and not even you, it's more than ignore. You're actually taught to have kind of like a disdain. You're supposed to kind of look down upon. Like, no, sir. You know, there's like such judgment in the way people. I mean, you see it obviously. Having lived in New York for 10 years, you see it on the subway every single day, like someone coming through asking for money, and people are like, there are literally signs on the subway that say, don't engage with...
Is that a defense mechanism, though, that you put up? Because, you know, when it is happening every day,
right.
and you are being asked, someone is saying, I need this from you.
Yes.
And you can't give it to them, for right. the most part. And so it is very much a, no, I'm going to put up this wall, and it's just not even going to be there. Do
exactly.
you know what I mean?
And because, like, there is, it's a tough balance being a human being, because you do have to... You can't take in all the suffering of the world every day, and that's not good for a person. It's not productive. Just acknowledging and taking it in and fully engaging with it every single day is not possible.
You wouldn't be able to do anything else.
Yes. So like there is value to like learning how to. Well, this is like, I feel like what we're getting at here, the larger theme.
Let me close this window.
Oh,
just because the
plane sound. Oh,
yes, yes, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I just want,
leaf blower.
Yeah, maybe flying.
I mean, maybe this is turning, this is changing the direction of this, but I do feel like something that it makes me think of is like, it is just like, here is the ultimate big one. It's just like morality in general. Is it important? Because like, I think like, what would Barry Gain in 1850 by making the culturally decided upon, like morally sound decision, which would be to like, be like, no, you're exploiting me. Right. I'm going to stay here. It's like, what does he actually gain? Just a sense of like pride for like 5 minutes, and then Pepe's gone, and he's like,
yeah, and then he lives his life alone, feeling the same shame he would feel, you know, being looked at. Like it's, you know, it's, yeah, it's all about what Barry wants, no matter if it's for the better or for better or for worse.
Yeah,
it's what he wants personally.
And also, I mean, they're in the dilemma. It is a lifetime contract, which I don't.
Miss Grimshaw could look at that for him, because I know she practiced law for a couple years.
Yeah, well, I could tell just from your dialect.
Yes,
there was a legal background.
But it's hard to say, because, you know, obviously, coming from the future, you're looking at that of like, oh no, that wouldn't be okay today. Like, that's horrible.
Right.
And with any sort of exploitation, there, it's like, oh no, 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 that's bad. But then in the moment and in that time, there was also like a tiny seed of opportunity for the people being exploited.
Yeah.
So it's obviously there's a power dynamic there, but it's still movement in some direction. But it's just as the person do like at Miss Pepe is in the wrong. I think
yes, no, Pepe is in the wrong. I think that's clear.
He is,
but I do think like I just don't
if
think
he treats
it's,
him
life
well,
is black and white. I just think
if Pepe treats him well, If Pepe gives him
a living wage,
he gives him a nice place.
Physically abuse him.
He does not physically abuse him. Food, you know.
But then I don't know. So then it gets like, is gawking innately bad? Like, is people's nature? They
I don't
want
think
to
it
look?
Is. I don't think it is. That's my whole thing. Is I don't think it is. As long as the gawking doesn't. It's okay to want to look at something to learn and to go, what yes, is this thing yes. I can't understand? The moment you turn your head and go, I don't even want to look at it. Nope.
Yeah.
Then you're cutting yourself off from ever knowing. And as a person and as being a deformed person, you're going, then people don't want to look at you because.
Right.
So it's just.
Well, how
this
about those reality
slope?
Shows like My 800 Pound Life? I mean, that's right. That's
the
modern day
thing.
Freak
it's,
show.
Yeah.
All those TLC shows.
And like, and it gives them money, it gives them a platform, it gives them like a sense of like, I mean, people like to be on camera and on TV because it gives them a sense of like, oh, I
matter.
There I am. Like, yeah. I matter and I've been like memorialized on screen and like, you know,
yeah.
Gives them a yeah, sense of purpose.
And it spreads awareness, you know, and people feel seen, but it is totally
exploitation. But they're absolutely worse.
So it's such, I don't,
and people
I'm really
watch it with
about
that
it.
Kind of energy. People
yeah. It's also how it's done, you know, like if it's an, if it's a, I've never seen any of those shows, but if it's done in an exploitative way, but if it's done in a way that's very true to the circumstance, which I doubt it is. The yeah. TLC show, I'm sure, is
well,
edited for drama.
One
and everything.
Thing if it's a documentary. It's mm-hmm. another thing if it's like a television show that's making someone a whole bunch of money. And
right.
I doubt it's that 800-pound guy seeing most of that money.
Right, of course.
It's some, you know, 175 exec, you know, living.
175?
He weighs 175
pounds. Oh. A 175-year-old exec.
You know, but you know what I mean. Like that's yeah. where the
he was
the
alive during
is.
The during Pepe Le Rouge. That's Pepe Le Rouge.
It's Pepe. It's a modern day Pepe. Oh no, it is Pepe.
No, it is.
Well, but that I do think it all just comes down to money. Like that's
it
where I feel like
does.
You and this is okay. When I used to host a show in New York, like it was, I always wanted to I wanted to. I wanted it to always feel like more than a comedy show, so I would get like drag queens and stuff. And like, because it wasn't like a drag venue, it wasn't billed as a drag show, and a lot of people were coming to the show because I was hosting it and they saw me as a comedian, so they were used to seeing me in more just like a pure comedy context. It was a lot of people who like had not encountered a lot of drag. And like, what would happen was, there were always a few people in the audience who were regulars at like drag, gay bars, drag performances. And so when a drag queen would get up on stage, those people would just know to stand up and throw cash at them and walk up to the stage and throw cash. And I always had this experience with like, I mean, even I had an experience where I was like early on where I was like, oh my God, like, is that, that's, that feels wrong.
Like degrading or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it's degrading. And then like I was quickly corrected by like drag queens. They were like, fuck, I wish I got paid for the show. You know, like
yeah.
No one got paid to do the show ever. No one ever gets paid for comedy shows. You know, so they were, yeah. They were like, I want the fucking money. Like they were so like drag queens. I always really admired the way they were so like crystal clear about like money and getting paid. And like they don't like, and when I would ask drag queens to the show, they'd be like, okay, I'm only doing it because I have another show that night. Like, I'm not going to get into... I'm not going to spend hours doing yeah. very complicated makeup, like, to not get paid.
Right.
You know,
right.
And, like, they had such a business savvy and were so kind of unsentimental about, like, they didn't find that degrading at all. And so then I would start, like, encouraging it. Like, I would always go up and, like, be very dramatic about how I presented the money, like, during their numbers and stuff. And they would interact and it was always very fun. But I just remember, like, through the end of that show, there would always be some people like, that made me so uncomfortable when they threw the money at the drag queen. I was like, no.
Because they're almost trying to be too reverent. Like,
exactly.
But it's not exploiting if
let
the power,
them perform.
Yeah.
If the power is with the person exploiting themselves.
Yes,
it's very
exactly.
different from the money. Like, if you were getting paid and you had these, like, you know, poor drag queens.
Well, that's the Barry dilemma here, because it's Barry's choice. If Barry wants to do it, then who's in the wrong?
No, I, you know, certainly not Barry.
Yeah, certainly not Barry.
But was I wrong to pay money to see that big squash?
You were wrong. There was no way that should have cost you anything. Was there another question under it, Amanda?
Oh, the part B of the question is just what, is it wrong for, you know, the guy, Pepe to be exploiting people? We've already kind of covered that.
Yeah.
And what if Barry had sought this opportunity out for himself? And I really think John was right when he said it comes down to who's profiting.
Yes.
Truly it does.
Yes.
So I do believe...
How does it break down money-wise?
Yes. I think it's all about the cash, really.
Yeah, truly. Yeah. I
agree. He can always run away, too. Like, Barry can... He can go...
Save some money.
He can save some money. And then maybe there's, like, a girl, like, one of the baton twirler girls that he becomes friends with on the thing.
Ooh, and they fall in love.
Yeah, and she goes, you know, I'm going to run away once I get enough money. And then...
Oh, they're both going to die. That's how this ends. They both...
Oh, no.
No, she's got her baton.
No, they get... they get involved in something bad because her...
Well, she's got
ex-boyfriend, yeah, the boyfriend's stole money from him, and now he's with the mom.
No,
they're after them.
Good. If I... That guy's a bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're after them. For sure. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're with this guy now? This side chauffeur. Don't talk about him like that.
He's boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys got to read up on Lobster Boy.
I saw the Hollywood story on Lobster Boy.
Do you know about this?
I remember seeing him on like National Enquirer covers.
How could he shoot a gun with those claws?
Remember they made a musical out of Lobster Boy?
No, that was Bat Boy, I thought.
I'm sorry, you're right.
Bat Boy is a fictitious person.
But Lobster Boy is real.
Oh, yes. There's an Eat Your Hollywood story on Lobster Boy.
Look it up, guys. I don't know enough about it to give you the...
But he did have claws.
Lowdown.
Yeah, wow.
So did his father.
Which is all interesting. I think we should not talk about these things. It's just all this stuff is so in the differences in deformities are so interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're meant to call them deformities anymore.
I know.
But why not?
Well, I think there's probably now names for these things.
That's less like negative. Yeah. Like deformity implies like you are like that is
abnormal.
Yeah, you're
abnormalities.
And that there is a norm that is correct.
Right. I just don't know. I mean, someone maybe will write in.
So should we go around and just say if we were buried, what we'd do and then what we think the right thing to do is?
Yeah, let's give our final thoughts. I'll go first because I'm joining that freak show.
Yes.
And I'm making the most of it. And you know what? Cut to 5 years later, I'm running my own.
Hell yeah.
Wow. And do you turn it into a Pepe type where you go to places and you kind of...
I'm checking out all the ends.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see your attic. The room in the attic. What's that like? And then you go up. Oh, no. That's occupied.
I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah, that's my choice.
I'm loving the way you guys slip into the fiction.
Oh, yes. Always. Slipping into the fiction.
Yeah.
And do you think that that's the right thing to do, or do you think Barry's, your version of Barry, is going to be better off by doing that?
I don't know, because life is a wild adventure and who could ever know, but I think so. I think take the chance.
Yeah.
I think put yourself out there, take the chance.
Yeah, I agree that I would get out of the circumstance I'm in, mm-hmm. because it's not like he has a loving family. He has nothing to lose by going.
Right.
He's already locked up in this attic. He's already being shunned by everyone. Of course people are going to come in and they're going to make him feel shitty at this sideshow, but he's also, he's going to be gaining a lot more while having that.
And he can learn how to protect himself in those moments emotionally, like how to just like play into it and kind of cut himself off a little bit. I think the biggest thing that you guys are both touching on that is so important for, that is why as Barry, I would absolutely, and I of course will remind you, I played Barry.
No, we know. We know. The audience is aware.
Okay. but no, I just think that I would absolutely leave and go to this, the freak show.
Pepe LaRouge.
Because of community.
Yeah.
Because of community. Because it's like at the end of the day, like that is the most important thing, is other people. Like, I just do feel like it is so unhealthy just to be alone, you know, and like he would just be alone, and like who cares about the circumstance if he's going to be with people who have dealt with similar, like, you know, crazy things in their life like that. Like it would be so nice to have that sense of community.
Yeah, that's right.
It would be huge.
Yes.
To go from no one to a whole crew.
Yeah,
I know. Just think of the adventure.
Honestly, this sounds fun. I think it sounds nice. Them all
the
in that.
Show's fun.
Start working on your garden.
My garden
for your big zucchini.
Oh no!
Well, no one else is bringing it up.
All right. So, yeah. So, we think that we went... Well, we think a lot of things. That was quite...
It's, you know, exploitation is hard. And part of me wonders, is exploitation a step on the path toward acceptance?
Like, well,
is
that how we... Like, that's what I think. Get out. Like, the only way to let marginalized people be seen is, like, they actually have to work within the system. Because they're... Until people at the fucking top are the previously exploited people... Or the previously marginalized people, or the currently marginalized people.
Yeah.
Until those they are the executives who are putting then all you can do is just work within the system until you have a little more creative agency and
leverage and connection.
It's opening people's minds, even for better or for worse. It's opening people's minds, even if it's badly exploitative.
Yeah.
It's opening them to see something they wouldn't have otherwise seen in a more readily available space. So this 800-pound guy show on TLC or whatever, it's like, you know, I'll look at someone that large and I'll go, you know, my reaction will be like, oh my God, like disgust. Now, if I watch a show that's being made for money and for a certain kind of drama or whatever, that's the bad part. But now I'm getting to know him as a person, right? And so now I'm getting to see the humanity behind him.
Yes.
So there's a balance.
It's it's a terrible step, but maybe forward.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's visibility is the first step, and it is important no matter the cost.
Yeah. So Barry, step out from those shadows.
Come on, Barry.
Let's see you, baby.
Wow. All
okay,
right.
Let's move on now to that was the beautiful discussion to our quickly we can do our Dear Big Ones, which is where we get a question from one of our listeners.
Ooh.
And this one's juicy.
Okay.
Thank Dear you, Big guys. Ones. I found out one of my supervisors is having an affair with my coworker. My coworker is single, but the supervisor is married with two kids. Their extracurricular activities haven't affected our work. However,
sorry, I wasn't listening. You have to go back. Okay, I started looking at the cup and I was like, how many?
Okay, I'll do it again. Dear Big Ones, I found out one of my supervisors is having an affair with my coworker. My coworker is single, but the supervisor is married with two kids. Their extracurricular activities haven't affected our work. However, there have been several incidents where I have walked in on them giving each other massages, awkwardly long hugs, etc. And their relationship has become a huge inside joke in our department. My coworker and I are the only ones trained to do our type of work. If they get caught by management and she gets fired or relocated, I will be forced to take over all of her workload and overnight shifts. Is what two consenting adults do none of my business? Or since they can't keep it low key, do I turn them in and take on the extra hours and workload? Wow, my instinct says, like, don't touch that.
Yes.
Let it play itself out.
Yes. I think if anything, she could talk to the coworker.
Yes.
And just be like, hey, hon, like, let's be real about what's going on here. Like, I have no moral judgment. Like, that's not my place to be like, this is wrong. But it is my place to talk about how this could potentially affect me. And, like, if you get caught or, like, if this gets reported, I'm going to be screwed job-wise. Unless she wants those extra hours, which the end of the question made me wonder if she's actually...
No, she doesn't, because I think it's, like, weekends and stuff.
Yeah.
And late nights.
You could report it if there's an HR department. I mean, you could report it, but then you're messing with people's lives. It's like, it's not your business, and they should just maybe need a reminder.
And again, this comes back to the morality thing. Like,
that's what...
Must everyone be punished for, like, doing something immoral? Like, if that punishment is going to then affect the wife and the kids and, like, their lives, it's always very tricky.
That's the thing, because you report it, and then that guy or girl, I don't know who the supervisor is, their life is, you know, that's going to come out. But then again, like, you see this going on. I don't know if they have a relationship, she has a relationship with the supervisor's family at all. But can you imagine everyone knowing you're the wife or the husband back home, and everyone your spouse works with knows that they're doing this stuff, and they don't say a thing?
That is so weird.
I know.
I do think that talking to the coworker is probably the best.
I think that's
thing where it's like,
fair.
Can you guys be a little more subtle?
Seriously, yeah.
Because
so you
my
don't
job's.
Think it's wrong to not, like, tell someone about the affair. Like, is that anyone's moral obligation?
No. I don't feel weird about that. Like, yeah. I wouldn't get into that shit.
Okay, so now the wife or a husband comes in and goes, hey, have you seen my spouse? Are they around?
And then where is the spouse actually?
Giving a massage to the coworker in the lunch lounge.
This feels very Mad Men. This has happened on Mad Men.
It has.
Season one, I'm watching it right now for the first time. It's hilarious.
Wow. I haven't seen it,
and I keep being like, really?
I should watch it.
You've like, never watched it?
I'm like 18 years too late, and I'm like walking around going, Mad Men's great. Everyone's like, yeah.
Yeah, we know.
It was like a long time ago. But no, I go, just trying to act off instinct here.
Yeah, no. Oh, my spouse around? I'm over here.
What? Sorry. What'd you say?
My spouse. Your supervisor. We're married.
So nice to meet you.
Yeah,
I've heard so much about you, and now I'm already in tricky territory.
Oh, really? What have you heard?
Oh, just good things.
Oh, yeah. We're just late for an appointment. I'm just going to go into their office.
You know what? Can I get you a coffee, a water, anything?
That's an asshole move, John. That's an asshole move. You are sticking up for that little...
Oh, you're part of the... Yeah, you're... What's it called? Yeah. Enabling.
But the thing is, I get it. But what do you do? What do you do? How do you handle that?
It's also his boss. I mean, I think it's nice to offer a coffee anyway. Like, that's probably part of your job.
I liked the coffee, Amanda. I loved it, actually.
I did make everyone a very nice coffee.
Yeah, that's tough because then that's not fair on you, but what do you do?
This is going to come out at some point. It's going to blow up. Like, you might be some collateral damage.
So you say just go in?
I say don't try to stop it. Guys, this isn't such a great episode.
Yeah. I had so much fun.
It's a great discussion. It really is mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm. It always makes you think.
John, where can people find you if you want to be found?
Akbar. it's a kind of fun, hip gay bar in Silver Lake.
I've never been.
Oh, it's so fun.
I've been. It's really fun.
It is?
It's a really, like, the look of it is really cool. I love it. It's, like, very kitschy, and it's great.
Maybe we should have a night out.
We should. It's a good place to dance, too.
Okay.
Just in that they have, it's not that there's that much space.
Yeah.
But it's a good, like, there's always good DJ. I feel like Akbar is, like, the place to go is, like, especially if you're a woman, I feel like, I mean, again. There are some gay bars that are definitely hostile to straight women, for sure, and not straight women, which sucks. But then there are some. Then I would just imagine if you truly want to dance and you're not dancing for, like sexual enticement, you're not dancing to get set up with someone or to possibly hook up with someone, then an Akbar is the place to go.
Other than Akbar, do you want people to follow you online?
Yes, of course. Twitter at Bajance.
Wow, you got an echo
muffled
going.
The mic. And Instagram at Bajance. If you're in LA, I have a show the second Tuesday of every month at The Satellite.
I want to come.
You should come.
Too.
The next one's going to be really good. April 10th is the next one. And when will this come out?
Week from yesterday.
Okay, well, if you're in LA, May 22nd through the 24th, I'm doing a run of shows on Satellite, me backed by a full band. My dear friend Theta Hamill, who's like a true like genius singer songwriter, is going to open for me, and Chelsea Peretti's going to open on one night. I don't know which one yet. And then I'm doing that for four nights in Brooklyn, June 22nd, 24th, four shows in two nights. But it's my favorite thing I do all year. It's like a huge, big show with, like,
that's
music,
so cool. You put that together.
I put so much work into it.
Well, that's
sounds
awesome.
Great.
It's like,
I love it
rehearsal. It's like harmonies. It's like absolute heaven.
Oh my god!
It's like
so
fucking fun. You gotta come.
Yeah, we'll go.
And as always, you can find us at The Big Ones.
Sorry, there's a technical difficulty. I don't think they heard.
At The Big Ones Pod on Twitter, and email us at thebigonespodcast@gmail.com. And we've got a Patreon page now, John. That means...
What is that?
Yeah, we didn't know either.
We're not sure, but it's basically people can pay like $1 a month and subscribe for bonus content.
Oh, that's smart.
So now we're making a little money.
Do you know OnlyFans or whatever? OnlyFans?
No,
there's like a porn star that I follow on Twitter who's like a friend of mine. I mean, very loose friend. I'm not excusing. I'm fine being friends with people in porn, obviously.
Sure.
I'm proud of it. I'm just trying to say we actually don't really know each other. But it's just from kind of a Brooklyn nightlife drag scene that we've like crossed paths. But he does porn.
Uh-huh.
And he has a website now, OnlyFans, where he's posting his own self-made porn. I mean, talk about like the conversation we've had today.
Yes,
like
make your own content.
And like, and seriously, it's $9 a month to join. And like, and he's putting his own content out. And like, I mean, if there is anything that's ever made me want to pay $9 a month, it is
homemade
seeing people
porn.
Have sex.
Consistent porn. But that is so true now. Okay, just to touch on back on the conversation real quick. Like, now there's so many more opportunities for people to be in charge of their own exploitation.
Yeah, totally.
Which makes it then not
I'll exploit myself. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah, so we've got a Patreon page. And if you guys subscribe, there's a new bonus episode. And you get a 10% discount on the Big Ones merchandise.
What's the website for that?
We'll tell you next time. There's a link somewhere. Yeah, listen next time.
And you should all... follow Ty Mitchell, TyMitchell on it. Pay $9 a month to watch him fuck.
Oh,
is it worth it?
Well, I don't pay for it yet. I might, but like it is actually just a weird thing where it's like he's a friend.
Yeah.
And like, but also like, of course he wants that money. That's why he's doing it. But then it's also just like, it is a strange moral quandary. It's not moral. It's just like
awkward.
I like know you and like I'm like watching you have sex, but like that, but also like I'm
that's like
putting it out on Twitter,
like he'd come to one
him.
Of your shows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like maybe,
and he sees that as you exploiting yourself.
Exactly.
He's going,
and it
what's
is
the difference?
It is me exploiting my like
talent,
like my gayness.
Your talent.
Yeah, your talent.
What's talent? Sorry.
Oh, and everyone watch Search Party.
Yeah.
And go to Vimeo and...
Oh, and watch 555.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
$3.99, that's all.
I'm in an episode. I play
right.
a casting
we
director.
We cut her out, so there are no Amanda
No,
Amanda's... I'm so
I
sorry.
I made it into one.
No, she did, and you were so genius.
I wasn't
were
asked.
You so fucking
I was
funny.
Not even asked.
Well, because we were scared.
Yeah. So was I. I was scared that I wasn't asked. I said, what did I do wrong?
We poured over that decision for months.
Well, thanks so much for being here, John.
This was a damn delight. And I gotta say, the natural light in this room, wow.
And thanks for everyone out there for listening to
The Big Ones.
That was good. You did good.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.